It's so good to see you all in this beautiful sanctuary worshiping together. And I extend warm welcome to each and every one of you here in the sanctuary and on Zoom as well, and pray that we will all experience the joy of Christmas as we worship together this morning. The lion was proud of his mastery of the animal kingdom. One day, he decided to make sure all the other animals knew he was the king of the jungle. He was so confident that he bypassed the smaller animals and went straight to the bear. "Who is the king of the jungle?" the lion asked. The bear replied, "Why, you are, of course." The lion gave a mighty roar of approval. Next, he asked the tiger, "Who is the king of the jungle?" The tiger quickly responded, "Everyone knows that you are, O mighty lion." Next on the list was the elephant. The lion faced the elephant and addressed his question, "Who is the king of the jungle?" The elephant immediately grabbed the lion with his trunk, whirled him around in the air multiple times, and slammed him into a tree. Then he pounded him onto the ground, dunked him underwater in a nearby lake, and finally threw him up on the shore. The lion, beaten, bruised, and battered, struggled to his feet. He looked at the elephant through sad and bloody eyes and said, "Look, just because you don't know the answer is no reason for you to mean about it." In the animal world, the weak are the prey of the strong. The one with power rules and survives. The food chain manifests very clearly about it. Power governs not only the animal world of instinct, but also humans. Power to control has determined the course of history and created human dramas. There are countless examples of it today. Russia's invasion of Ukraine, the recently collapsed decade-long dictatorship in Syria, Communist China's ambition to invade Taiwan, and oppression in North Korea are notorious instances. But in actuality, the power struggle is happening in every government, business, school, and even in church. How about individuals? People's relationship is formulated by power dynamics. We'll look deeper into this universal drive and what Christ coming into this world means this morning. We read from the Gospel of Luke, but in terms of the Gospel talking about Jesus being the Son of God, it is an identical message. So I'm going to use the genealogy in Gospel of Matthew this morning to talk about how Jesus is related to David. The Gospel of Matthew, from the first chapter to the last chapter, presents the integral message that Jesus came as a king. The Gospel begins with, "This is the genealogy of Jesus the Messiah." That's the first sentence of Matthew. Messiah is Hebrew word for the anointed one. In the Old Testament, kings, prophets, and priests were anointed. Jesus served in all three of these functions. The Gospel of Matthew focuses more on Jesus as king. Right after the genealogy of Jesus the Messiah comes the Son of David, emphasizing Jesus was born in David's lineage. To prove that Jesus belonged to David's lineage, Matthew divided the genealogy into three sections of 14 generations: Abraham to Jesse, David's father; David to Josiah at the time of the exile to Babylon; and Jeconiah to Jesus. The beginning and the ending of 14 generations mark a watershed moment in Israel's history. After the Babylonian exile, the nation of Israel ceased to exist. Under this scope, King David sits at the very center of the kingdom of Israel before the Babylonian exiles. Therefore, David was literally the middle point and the most significant figure of the history of Israel. After associating 14 generations with David, Matthew points out that Jesus too was the 14th generation from the Babylonian exile, making Jesus the legitimate descendant of David, born in the God's perfect and grand scheme. Speaking of the genealogy, let's look at the genealogy in Luke's Gospel. Luke's Gospel traces Jesus' ancestry not on Joseph's side, but on Mary's. According to Luke, Mary too was a descendant of David. Thereby, Jesus inherited the physical DNA of David's family. You know, in Jewish tradition, a child born of a Jewish mother is accepted as a Jew. Doesn't matter what kind of a background the father has. As long as the mother is a Jew, the child is accepted as a Jewish descendant. From the angles of, from the lineage of Joseph and Mary, Jesus was undoubtedly the descendant of David. David was a kind of a figure who became the father, earthly father to Jesus. So there was no direct connection between Jesus and Joseph. But regardless, going through the Joseph's lineage and going through the Mary's lineage, Jesus was the descendant of David. Matthew's first chapter highlights ancestral facts of Jesus as David's son. The second chapter of Matthew adds several proof that Jesus, David's son, was born a king in the king's town. Bethlehem was David's hometown. From the time of Boaz and Ruth, David's great-grandparents, David's family lived there in Bethlehem. God was displeased with the first king of Israel, Saul, and sent Samuel to Bethlehem to anoint the second king. Samuel saw the young boy, David, and anointed him a king in Bethlehem. The Messiah, the prophecy in the Messiah in the Old Testament speak very clearly that a ruler of Israel would come out of Bethlehem. And according to Matthew 2, Herod called those experts, and those experts knew where the Messiah was to come. Also, according to John 7, commoners appear to have known the prophecy that the Messiah was to be David's descendant from Bethlehem. That's when Jesus went to Jerusalem and spent the day in the court of the Jerusalem temple, and as they saw what Jesus was doing, they were questioning if Jesus was the Messiah, and people said, well, he was not actually the descendant of David because he was regarded as a Nazarene or Galileans. And that's what they said when they said the Messiah was to come out of Bethlehem. And also in the second chapter of Matthew, we see the Magi coming to worship and recognize Jesus as the newborn king of Israel. So chapter 1 and chapter 2 altogether, Matthew talk about Jesus was a son of David. He was born a king in Kingstown. How about his death? Before the crucifixion, Pilate asked Jesus, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus acknowledged he was. So Pilate put a written charge on the cross saying, "The king of the Jews," in Aramaic, Latin, and Greek, which signifies that Jesus died as a king for the entire world. The last chapter of Matthew ends with Jesus says great commission, in which said, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me." Jesus proclaimed that he was enthroned as king of the universe, and that's how the Gospel of Matthew ends. The Gospel of Matthew proclaimed that Jesus is indisputably the Christ, the Messiah, the King. He was born a king, lived as a king, died as a king, and rose again as the king. The problem was the public refused to accept him. King Herod, for example, tried to kill him after he was born. Matthew's gospel portrayed Herod as very insecure about his throne. Hearing the news of a newborn king, he was disturbed. He was very cunning. He investigated the place and the time of the birth of the newborn king. Then he sent the Magi to Bethlehem and told them that he wanted to go worship the newborn king himself, when, in fact, he was going to kill the newborn king. Herod was ruthless. After he learned that the Magi outsmarted him, he became furious and ordered to kill all the boys in and around Bethlehem who were 2 years old and under, making sure to eradicate any potential threat to his throne. The history agrees with Matthew's description of Herod. He was power hungry and would do anything to secure his position as king. There was a civil war in Palestine in 40 BC, and Herod fled to Rome, where he was nominated king of Judea. And there was no reason for him to be nominated as king of Judea because he was an Edomite, an Arab. To solidify his power, Herod divorced his first wife, Doris, and sent her and his son away and married Mariam, a Hasmonean princess who belonged to an influential priestly family of Jewish leaders. He unwisely played a political game to side with Anthony during the conflict between Octavian and Anthony. After Octavian defeated Anthony, Herod tactfully survived and gained Octavian's trust. Herod possessed a manipulative personality and did anything to protect his interests. Herod did not allow any hint of having a new king to replace him. He displayed a control freak psychological disorder and mirrors how this world runs. Chasing after power and control is commonly found everywhere. The United States is not an exception. Let me give you an example. On October 6, 1865, just months after the Civil War ended, the 13th Amendment outlawing slavery was ratified and became the law of the land. But that didn't mean every state approved the ratification of the amendment. Mississippi state legislature, for example, was dominated by whites, bitter over the defeat of the Confederacy, and they rejected the measure. 130 years passed before Mississippi took action. By 1995, not long ago, Mississippi was the only state in the Union that had not approved the ratification of the 13th Amendment. Finally, on Thursday, February 16, 1995, the Mississippi Senate voted unanimously to outlaw slavery by approving the ratification of the 13th Amendment of the Constitution. Senator Hill Frazier, a member of Mississippi's legislative Black Caucus, said, "I think it's very important for us to show the world that we have put the past behind us." Just as people's reluctance caused the delay in some states ratifying an end to slavery in the United States, so the world is still unwilling to accept Christ's rule. Let's switch gears and look at our personal lives. Do we acknowledge Jesus as our King and humbly submit to his rule? The name Jesus Christ is our confession, recognizing Jesus is our Christ, our King. But is our calling Jesus as Christ followed by our submission to him? Or are we still trying to run life by our ego and narrow vision? Consider our frustrations and see if our frustration resembles that of King Herod. Why are our hearts troubled? Is it because things do not go the way we want? Troubles come from the area where we feel like we lost control. But look at our problems closely. We may have lost control over certain situations, but God's power is over them. When God is in control, there is no need for us to be anxious about. We should rather be at peace. Every nation and every individual have fought over power and control issues for millennia. At the time of Jesus' birth and death, only a handful of people recognized Jesus as King. Jesus being the King is still a big question to many non-believers today. Believers, on the other hand, are divided into different groups. Some believers are fully submissive to Christ's reign, while others are partly submissive. When we give up every self-centered agenda to Jesus' control and live in harmony with God's reign, we will experience peace in our hearts and in our lives. And that's not just for this Christmas, but Christmas to come, many Christmases to come. Amen.